Hey, friends and neighbors, welcome to another fresh episode of Trashy Divorces. Hey, Stacy.
Hey, Alicia. And we're back.
This week.
Yeah.
The first cut is the deepest.
Oh, we're time traveling.
We are time traveling.
Right back to our youths in the 90s.
These divorces will make you cringe.
No kidding.
They really will. These are the early 90s trashy divorces of Joey and Mary Jo Buttafuoco.
And John and Lorena Bobbitt.
No, go ahead and call him by his whole name, because he earned that.
John Wayne Bobbitt.
What a fucking doofy name.
At one point, he took a subsequent wife's last name.
I can't imagine
just
why.
Just so you would not be.
Let's find out. Welcome to another episode of Trashy Divorces. Let's do this.
Hey, Alicia, so I understand we are time traveling back to the go-go 90s.
The go-go most trashy divorces of the 1990s.
Yep. First cut really is the deepest.
First cut is the deepest. Song, originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
By Cat Stevens.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn
Released in 1967. I didn't know that. It's been covered by a lot of people.
Yeah.
Rod Stewart probably is the most famous version.
Yeah, I think that was the one that was like appropriate for like my age. But yeah, Sheryl Crow.
It's Cat Stevens' song.
Generation Beyond Me.
Well, the first cut of this episode of the podcast is Joey and Mary Jo. Looked like things were going great.
Joey and Mary Jo?
Joey and Mary
Jo. It's a lot of Joe.
It didn't go,
I remember this being a very famous, very scandalous.
Oh my God, crazy. Crazy pants.
Okay.
Crazy town.
All right. Well, so, I'm here for this.
Let's start at the beginning.
This is Sopranos before Sopranos. It's Jersey Shore before Jersey Shore, right?
You nailed it.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Joey. Small town boy. Born in 1956. On Long Island. Born and raised. Meets Mary Jo in high school. They fall in love.
Aw.
I know. Young love.
What could possibly ever go wrong?
Not a thing.
Story's
over.
Thank God.
It's you now.
Terrible story. All right. Moving on.
No, they fall in love and they do the thing and they get married September 4th, 1977. Nice little Labor Day wedding. They have two kids, Paul and Jessica. They're living the perfect life. Things are rocking. 70s go great. 80s go great. But in 1992.
Columbus sailed the ocean blue. No.
There's a 16-year-old on the other side of town.
Ooh.
Yep. I know it's 1992 because this soundtrack is indelibly linked in my brain to Criss Cross. Atlanta artist. Jump. Criss Cross will make you. Yeah. I missed the bus. My brother dressed in backwards clothes and thought he was like.
Right. Did the Criss Cross thing.
For like a year. That was pretty fun.
Little white boy preteen.
Criss cross, make you jump. Okay. 16-year-old other side of town, 1992.
Funny what links together in memory.
It's so weird. Memory is a fucked up thing. So there's a girl who has a 16th birthday, and for her 16th birthday, she gets a white 1989 Dodge Daytona.
A used car.
Well, 92. I mean, 3 years old.
Well, yeah,
you're
still
rocking it at 16 with a Dodge fucking Daytona,
Anyway.
It's
making a joke.
It's a hot, sexy car if you're 16.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, apparently she's a crab driver. So she wrecks it a lot, and a series of accidents lead her into the complete auto body shop owned by Joe.
Mm.
Apparently she wrecks her car so often she becomes a regular.
That is not what you want.
Nope.
Be a regular at a lot of places, but not the... Gotta get my car fixed.
Give me
fixed
a favorite
again.
Pub. Yeah. Give me a favorite store. Let me have my favorite checkout line with the teller. But...
Yeah. Good coffee shop. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Bagels.
Okay. But she's an auto body regular. Okay.
She's an auto body regular. By July of 1991, the two of them are having a torrid affair. They are sleeping together 4 or 5 times a week, sometimes more than once a day.
Good God.
Doing it at the shop.
So he's in his 40s. Am I doing that math right?
So 19... 56, 66, 76, 86.
So he's in his late 30s.
Late 30s. Okay. Yeah.
And she's a teenager.
So starting his midlife crisis early.
Yeah, yeah. Got to get a move on that.
Sometimes they're doing it more than once a day. At the shop, they get hotels. He has a speedboat they go on to. They're doing it a lot. He apparently is really good at covering it up.
Also, I mean, I get worn out just watching TV.
Right.
Like, this is amazing. Okay.
Yeah, I don't...
Very, very resilient.
Like, I don't know, everyday sex, yeah. I guess, when you're 16 is 30, I don't know. Anyway. He's late 30s. She's 16.
Yeah, gross. Okay.
And... like you get when you're, I mean, this is really a story of two sociopaths, Amy and Joe. Like, that's it. But she's, okay, decides that Mary Joe is a problem. She wants Joey off for herself.
Mm.
So she makes a plan.
Uh-oh. When teenagers make plans, they either end up in college or it goes very badly.
This one went very badly and she ended up in jail.
Yeah.
So Mary Joe's out in the back painting. She's got gloves on, like she's up to her neck in paint, getting whatever, her morning errands done. She's a housewife. There's something that needs to be, okay. Doorbell rings. Teenager shows up at the door.
Girl Scout cookies.
Not Girl Scout cookies.
Well.
This kid, and I've seen a lot of interviews with Mary Jo, and Mary Jo like, kind of talks about it being an adult. Like, you know when a kid is lying. You can smell it on him, you know, like there's nothing about the story that you're telling me is true. So Mary Jo already is kind of like, this is super fishy. But this kid says her name is Anne Marie and her sister is having an affair with Mary Jo's husband, Joey.
This seems like a super weird conversation.
Super weird conversation to have. Shows her a complete auto body t-shirt that Joey gave her sister to prove as proof of the affair.
Now, can I interject?
Yeah. This is a stupid teenager, right?
Right, but I mean, this is not the sister of, I'm just guessing.
No, it is not the sister. It is, in fact, Amy Fisher.
Mm.
So, and why she needed to have this kind of conflict, like, I don't know.
Sociopath?
I mean, because Mary Jo's like, okay, great, thanks, kid, for coming by and telling me this. I'm going to go ahead and go call Joe.
Right. Or something, like, I don't even, yeah, I have no idea what must have been going through her mind is.
So Mary Jo turns
inside
to go call Joe
and close
in that
the door
split second that she turns, Amy Fisher pulls out a gun and shoots Mary Jo in the face.
Whoa.
If she had not had that split second turn. Like, she...
Oh, she would have died.
Beyond, certainly.
Oh.
But instead, the bullet ends up going in by her ear. So, it... I mean, she is in bad, bad shape.
Yeah, I mean, never good to get a bullet in your head in any circumstances, but...
Bullet's still in her head.
Seriously.
Yeah, it's too close to... I mean, but, so... Okay, I get ahead of myself. So... Mary Jo, very bad off, gets rushed to the hospital, and she stays in a coma, like, for 2 days. She ends up regaining consciousness. She cannot hear. Half of her face is blown off.
Sure.
But they give her a pad and a pen, and she writes down what this kid told her. That she's 19, her name is Anne Marie, wrote the street name. Because Mary Jo was quizzing her. Where do you live? Who are your parents?
Yeah,
you
know.
Wrote down the street name, said that she was having an affair with my husband. The cops are astounded. Like, the cops are looking for a guy who's committing, like, random home invasions,
sure,
right?
Sure. But no, this white-on-white violence.
So, they're like, holy cats. They end up getting Amy, detaining her, the sordid story comes out. Geez. Amy pleads guilty to aggravated assault in 1993 with a sentence of 5 to 15 years. She served 8 years. and was granted parole in May of 1999. She did publicly ask for Mary Jo's forgiveness, and Mary Jo, in fact, forgave her. Seven years after. Hold on. Mary Jo is a survivor, and she's a hero. She survives. She is deaf in one ear. She's got facial paralysis, but she still stays with Joe.
No.
Oh, yeah. Stays with Joe. Wait. We're not at their trashy divorce yet, babe.
Oh, shit. Did he come clean about the affair? Or did she not believe that?
He never did. He is charged with 19 counts of statutory rape.
Oh, God.
Sodomy, endangering the welfare of a child. He initially pleaded not guilty. He later changes his plea. He tells his family, I can plead guilty to one count and be in jail 4 months.
Right.
Or I can go away for 20. So I didn't do it.
Sure.
But if I did it.
Sure.
I'm going to take this one count and have a lesser sentence. He served 6 months jail time.
Yeah.
Released
after
4 months.
Yeah. That is a calculation that a lot of actually innocent people are forced to
make
as well.
Cops are trying to prove, because Amy says he knew about it. And he's like, I didn't know that you were going to shoot my
I
wife.
Never even met the woman. I don't know who worked on her car.
Yeah,
you
can't believe me or your lying eyes.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, man.
Yeah. He maintains that he didn't know about what was going to happen. They never really got him on that, but he did serve a prison sentence. At this point, she's away.
Right. Okay. She's off in, her 8-year.
After his release from prison, things are a little bit hot in Long Island because, can you imagine?
Well, and her parents must want him dead, right?
She is still utterly devoted to him. You want to hear something really sad? I watched an interview with...
sadder than the rest of this
so
far?
No, with her kid. And the day Amy Fisher decides to pull her stupid stunt, the kid was ready to audition to be James in James and the Giant Peach at their elementary school.
So this is the Buttafuoco kid. This is Mary Jo's kid.
Yeah, this is her daughter Jessica. Yeah.
Oh, God. So she's got perfectly normal school things going on.
Can you imagine being a kid?
Oh, my God.
And having your mom... And Jessica said, they just said my mom was in an accident in the backyard. Can I see her? No. So you've got horrible. How Amy Fisher only got aggravated assault, I don't know. How Joey... Okay. So you think things are a little hot in Long Island. We're recognized. Let's go get our kids a fresh start. They moved to Southern California.
Okay, that doesn't seem unreasonable.
No, not unreasonable. They moved to Southern California, and Joey totally stays out of trouble, right?
You would think.
In 1995, he pleaded no contest to solicitation of a prostitution charge.
Jesus Christ.
He was fined, placed on probation for 2 years.
Sure.
In 2004, he was sentenced to a year in jail and 5 years of probation after pleading guilty to automobile insurance fraud. As part of the sentence, he is prohibited from working in the auto body industry in California for the rest of his life.
Oh, my God.
Ding.
So, okay. Yeah. So, career offline. Okay.
So, now, in August.
Makes me wonder, was New York just super lax? Because I assume he'd been doing this for years.
No evidence. We cannot. I'm not going to speculate on that.
I can
tell you in 2004, he did get put away for auto insurance fraud. In August of 2005, so he gets out of jail. As soon as he gets out of jail, he gets put back in jail because he's charged with illegal possession of ammunition. He's not allowed to own ammo. Police officers found it during a search of his home. He pleaded no contest. He eventually ends up staying in jail till about 2007.
Okay.
Mary Jo, in between the 1995 solicitation of prostitution and before he went in for auto insurance fraud, Mary Jo stays defensively loyal to him until 2003. She defends him when he's arrested for...
I like this term, defensively loyal.
But she's brainwashed by a sociopath. Hold on.
Yeah.
So, during this time, he's blaming everybody else. at some point during this, I'm not sure what year it happened. She did not state this. Mary Jo, who is on a ton of medication for pain and anxiety, ends up addicted and ends up at Betty Ford.
Oh.
Ends up going to the Betty and learned there that, hey, this is the life I have. This happened to me. I survived. She got herself turned around, sober, decided to move forward with something that she can do with the circumstances she has. Like, she's deaf. She's got facial paralysis. She has vision problems. How does she support herself? Like, so I can kind of get during that time period why you stay with the husband if you feel like you are physically incapable.
Right, right.
He's taking care of me financially.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a sociopath.
Sure,
but
committing fraud, you know.
Right. You kind of, like, why would you stay with him? Kind of. Okay, but she ends up getting help at the Betty, which is great. Let me go back. In 2006, she gets some facial reanimation with a badass plastic surgeon. Her face looks amazing now.
This is, I will say, both of our stories involve, there are plastic surgeons in both of our stories. So
it's
a celebration of plastic surgeons.
The first cut is
today on Trashy Divorces.
So she ends up writing a book called Getting It Through My Thick Skull, Why I Stayed, What I Learned, and What Millions of People Involved with Sociopaths Need to Know.
Yeah,
that's the
comprehensive title.
She was inspired to write the book after her son referred to Joey as a sociopath. And okay. She didn't really know what that word meant. And she looked it up. Hey, WebMD. Hey, Google.
Right.
And had the realization of, oh, my God. Like, apparently her mom would say to her all the time, when are you going to get it through your thick skull that this guy is? Come on, Mary Jo.
Yeah, yeah.
So the memoir does describe her whole life. It doesn't just focus on the events in 1982. She describes how she felt manipulated to stay with a person who was a sociopath. Like, sociopaths are a real thing, and they do not, A, understand, nor B, give a shit they're hurting anybody else. That's their MO. She does a number of things using her story to raise awareness for facial paralysis and gun violence. She did get remarried in 2012 to a man named Stu Tendler. Unfortunately, but sadly, he passed away last year in 2018 from cancer.
Hmm.
Apparently, they have, right, still kids together.
Right,
they
and
see
he's
each other at,
free. He's not in jail.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
She says their relationship now is cordial.
Hmm.
Like, they'll see each other at kid parties. Like, you learn how to deal with a sociopath. You learn how to stay in control and maintain your own.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea she stayed with him
until 2003.
Yeah, I just assumed that, you know, once your fucking husband's teenage mistress comes and shoots you in the face, that you'd probably get a divorce.
Stayed for another 11 years.
Crazy.
Like, how much brainwashing?
Oh, yeah.
Legitimately
immense.
Is that... I mean, I've dated a sociopath. I get that. It is tough. And you really are gaslit. You're the one that thinks that you're crazy.
Right, right.
No, he certainly... That couldn't... So she does use her story for good. I would like to just... apropos to nothing, be sure to remind you, back in 1992, when we were all jumping, there were not one but three television movies about this story.
Oh, right, right.
NBC aired Amy Fisher, My Story. Ugh. Noelle Parker played our Long Island Lolita in that film.
Right, that's, yeah, that was the Long Island Lolita case. Is
exactly
that is what this is. Okay.
The Amy Fisher story was ABC's contribution, starring our favorite girl and star of episode number 5, Drew Barrymore.
Yay.
It was the highest rated. CBS aired Casualties of Love, the Long Island Lolita story, with Alyssa Milano starring in the pivotal role of Amy Fisher. Joey Buttafuoco is a sociopath. He's a trash can. It just
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
and you brainwashed your wife, and it's not cool. Like, you brainwashed her so well, it took her another 10 years to divorce you, and your teenage lover shot me in the face.
That is so remarkable to me. Like,
I mean,
good Lord.
I guess he did have his trash bagginess did have global reach to a certain extent, just because it's famous. But he's no like Newt Gingrich level of. So I'm gonna go 4.5.
Did you say 19 statutory rape charges that were filed against him?
19. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean 4.5. Yeah. I don't know. Five would work too.
Okay.
I think. But
I mean.
Woo.
God, he's horrible.
Okay, if he was in fact plotting with Amy Fisher to have the teenage mistress shoot his wife in the face,
totally
that's
different
five.
Stack of charges.
It's five.
Oh yeah. Well, they investigated it for a long time and just couldn't find it. Amy Fisher says he knew about it.
Yeah.
He participated in.
But she has every
plan.
She has every incentive in the world to say that.
Absolutely. They were never able to find evidence to pin that on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All
so
right.
Good times.
Woo! Long Island.
So there
Lolita.
Is one of our two trashy divorces. I think we've got the trashiest one for next. So let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
Take a quick shower.
Yeah. Go,
take a quick break.
Go wash that trash off.
Yeah.
A little gunplay in your face. Yeah.
Poor Mary Jo.
Mm-hmm.
Like her, she really is. She's. Talk about using your story to survive and conquer and really make a life path evolution.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back. Hey, Trash Pandas. Stacy here to share my latest take a mental breather from your day find. Two Dots. Two Dots is a free-to-download puzzle-based mobile game where you connect dots and relaxing puzzles while unlocking levels and collecting treasure and prizes along the way. Connect at least two adjacent dots of the same color to make a move. And remember, dots can connect horizontally and vertically, but never, ever diagonally. And as engaging as the main puzzles are, there are also side quest game modes like the scavenger hunt, where you find hidden objects amidst riotously colorful art, and classic adventure game vibes in the arcade. Each fun and relaxing Two Dots puzzle offers a new gameplay experience, plus the chance to collect trophies, medals, and other souvenirs of your adventures. As you advance through the levels, you'll earn various power-ups and special dots with new effects, like erasing all dots of a certain color or clearing a row and column simultaneously, and the colorful visuals find the perfect balance between stimulating and soothing.
Two Dots is free to download, and you can play even when you're offline. Make it a party by challenging your friends on Facebook. If you're ready to kick back and unwind, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS, and start connecting.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
Who are you coming in hot with this week, Stacey?
Oh, boy. So this one, I...
Freshly showered.
I'm ready. You know, we picked this, like, fun theme for the show that seemed funny. I started reading on my story and realized...
No, it's been a tough week. It's been a tough week in research around here.
Much more dark than I was aware of. This is the Lorena Bobbitt and John Wayne Bobbitt incident.
His parents did not like him, did they?
I mean,
John Wayne Bobbitt.
John Wayne Bobbitt. I'm gonna mention that the I'm Horrified podcast, which I love.
Yeah.
Also, they covered the story a few months ago, and that is worth listening to as well. I'm going to try to give it a little different angle so that,
sure,
you know, I'm not just restating what they did. All right, fellow child of the 90s.
What year? This was after the Buttafuoco's.
Yeah. On June 23rd, 1993, one of the most famous spousal attacks in American history occurred.
Tell me.
A 26-year-old man bearing the multiply unfortunate name of John Wayne Bobbitt was asleep in his bed in Manassas, Virginia, when sometime between 3:30 and 4:30 in the morning, his 24-year-old wife, Lorena, crawled into bed and cut off his penis with a 12-inch kitchen knife.
12 inches?
Go big or go home.
I.
Lorena then drove away. In her possession were $100, John's Game Boy that she stopped to swipe.
Because that's what you take.
Don't know what she was planning to play. And, of course, John's penis.
Oh, my God.
So she's
driving down the road?
Driving down the road, 10 and 2 and dick. I don't know. Like, so eventually she, like,
I can't drive and hold this dick at the same time.
Yeah, so she, like, throws it out the window into a field, I think across the street from a 7-Eleven.
But you don't start with just cutting your husband's penis off.
I wouldn't think so, no. No, that's that seems like an escalation.
Oh, my God. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, she drove to her boss's house. She worked as a manicurist, and her boss called the police to tell them what had happened and approximately where they could find
his appendage.
The missing member. Police recovered it after a few hours, and following instructions to put it on ice if it was located, they head into the 7-Eleven. This is such a just killer
detail.
Where
is this? Massachusetts?
Virginia.
Virginia.
Manassas,
okay.
Virginia.
Okay, Manassas. Okay.
Okay, so they head into the 7-Eleven, severed penis in hand, I guess.
Oh my God, can you imagine being that shift worker?
They get a Big Bite hot dog box, put ice in it, put the dick on the ice in the Big Bite hot dog. It's just, seriously, there's a reason that this was, there is so much about this that
you
is
know
just
that
like,
store attendant came home from their shift like you were never gonna
never
believe what fucking
gonna
happened to me
believe.
Tonight.
Yeah, there's so much about this that is just like hysterically funny
in
dark
a horrible way.
But
it's a dark comedy.
Big Bite
film,
hot dog
film noir
box with Jesus a Christ human penis in it on ice. Anyway,
where's Johnny Wayne?
Johnny Wayne is at the hospital. So he had, there was a friend crashing on his couch. So presumably screaming began and the friend took him to the hospital.
Oh my God.
A 9.5-hour long surgery followed, during which time,
mm-mm,
a urologist and a plastic surgeon,
sure,
successfully reattached John's penis.
The first cousin. They really did reattach it?
They reattached it, and they gave him a cautiously optimistic prognosis with the caveat that it could also turn black and fall off. They were just going to have to wait and see. Like, this
now's
story.
Now's the time to start praying, buddy.
Yeah. And so this was like the dawn of, you know, cable news. Court TV was like 2
absolutely
years old when this happened. The 24-hour news
and
cycle
was, and we're still
was
a year off from OJ and Nicole.
Yes.
Like, that's
exactly right. That's
precipitating.
That like, followed the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this story was just a sensation, like, immediately. So Manassas is like half an hour outside of D.C., so getting reporters there was not a big deal.
Oh, we're on the ready. Yeah.
So it turned into this insane circus.
So he's hot. Where does she go?
She, weirdly enough, ends up at the
in?
Yeah, she ends up at the same hospital where she undergoes a rape kit because, well, let me tell you the story.
Oh.
Let's rewind the tape.
Rewind.
Because the spouses surprisingly have different stories of what transpired.
I would like her story, please.
Yes, let's go there. Lorena Gallo was born in Ecuador and raised in Venezuela in a fairly traditional Catholic family, like you would expect. She was petite. She weighed 95 pounds at the time of this attack.
Not even 100 pounds?
She's a little thing.
That's tiny.
She's still a little thing.
That's skinny girl. That's Bethany. That's tiny, tiny, tiny.
Yeah, I think she's pretty short in
stature
as well.
Short, petite as well.
So,
okay.
Anyway, she had thick, dark hair. Was reportedly very shy. She'd fallen in love with America, though, watching TV and movies as a child. So, in 1987, she comes to Virginia on a student visa and you know, goes to school, takes the job in the local salon to support herself, and she meets Marine Lance Corporal John Wayne Bobbitt, who was stationed at Quantico.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They date for a year,
and
never
he's a,
alone.
He's a Marine?
Yeah, he's a U.S. Marine.
Okay.
So he's not petite. He's not small. Mm-mm. He's not like...
He's a well-trained killing machine.
Yeah, he's also kind of a doofus, as I think the story will bear out.
I can't wait.
He's a violent doofus. I think that's what we're going to see here. So they dated for a year, always with a chaperone, because, again, she came from this very traditional
sure.
background. They were just never alone, and he was a perfect gentleman. And so they get married.
Sociopaths often are.
He's
not. He's not. He's.
I don't think he's
smart
enough
to be a sociopath.
Yeah.
He's just violent. He's a violent, crude pig.
Kind of.
Okay.
He's a Trump guy. Shocker. In June 1989, they married. She was 20. He was 22. So again, like, for her 19th year, she dated this guy, but always sort of in a group.
Well, can you imagine you're a Venezuelan student, you're here, you're working, and here comes a duck. Marines are sexy.
Yeah, no,
they
he's
look sexy in their uniform.
He was quite the looker.
You know, if you have this idea of America, like, you're sort of entranced, or
sure.
you could be really swept away by this love story that you think you're in.
Oh, without a doubt. And like, she had fallen in love with America, and so here's like a warrior for
here's an American soldier.
America,
and,
yeah.
Like,
it all it was all yeah. It,
poor baby.
It could have been everything.
Poor baby.
Because during their courtship, he was a perfect gentleman, but within a month of their getting married, he started to get violent when they argued.
Nope.
And again, he's just a much bigger entity than she is. So in 91, he was discharged from the Marines, couldn't find steady employment. So things got worse.
Was there anything weird about why he was discharged?
Not that I know of. I think
okay,
he just like got to the end
tour,
of his tour.
Tour of duty was over.
Yeah,
okay.
Just didn't renew. And realistically, he probably should have, because like they had a lot of money problems after this.
Mm.
And Lorena, even at one point,
which never makes an abuser act
tried
better.
To steal a bunch of money from the salon. And
oh, no.
But her boss remained one of her biggest defenders. Like, again, the night of the attack, she drove to her boss's house. Like her.
Yeah, her boss is definitely the support system of
right,
this. Okay.
Right. So, yeah. So they got that smoothed over somehow. But it's a part of the story. He's out of work. Things get worse. John was sexually abusing her. He was threatening her. She says he once forced her to get an abortion. They broke up for a year, but ended up reconciling, which solved nothing.
Nothing.
2 days before the attack, she goes to the courthouse in Manassas and talks to somebody there about, you know, what's the procedure to get a restraining order, or, you know, what other, like, what types of protections can you
give
me? Because
she now knows she's in trouble.
Against my husband, yeah, because he's beating the hell out of me, and it's bad. But she left without seeing a judge, so... Okay, so according to Lorena, the night that she attacked John, he came home late with this buddy. They'd been out at a bar. He was drunk. They were both drunk. The friend crashes on the couch. John comes to bed, rapes her, falls asleep. She gets up, goes to the kitchen for some water, sees the knife, and just...
Problem solved.
Yeah,
You know how I don't get raped anymore?
Yeah.
There's a knife. Hold on, wait a minute. I can solve this problem.
Yeah, and I mean, she claims that it was more like instinctual than that. It wasn't like she claims that she was not consciously acting at that point. She was just overcome, and so she anyway grabs the knife, goes back to the bedroom.
Well, you've been at court 2 days. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah,
this is
no,
a horrible
story. It's very bad. So the New York Times had a profile of her. They've been trying to scoop me with this all week. I was so mad. Like, the alert popped up on my phone. Like, Lorena Bobbitt story. I'm like, no, fuck you guys.
Wait a minute. Hold on. This is our scoop.
We have an independent podcast. You guys have, like, bureaus. Like,
way
no,
to go, New York
my
Times.
Story. Okay. While John is having his miraculous penis reattachment surgery, she's like down the hall having a rape kit. Things really only get weirder from there. So both of the Bobbitses were charged with felonies, different felonies. So each separately,
sure,
each of them went to trial on charges that could have put them in prison for 20 years.
What did he get charged with? I'm assuming rape.
John was charged with marital sexual assault or marital rape. I'm not sure what the statute specifically says. I did read the statute. But in 1993, whatever, this was a really new legal idea, like a legal concept that a spouse could rape a spouse.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding. It only became a federal law like a couple years before. And then like all 50 states, I want to say maybe even in 93, all 50 states finally had some sort of inclusion. But there are still 15 states where like it is a crime to rape your spouse, but the standards are different. Like
still to this day?
To this day, yeah. 15 states, including Virginia, where these exceptions are things like it, like the use of force is a required element, or, you know, under normal circumstances, if a woman gets very drunk, she technically can't consent, and so that can lead to a rape charge.
But that
prohibition does not exist in certain states if you're married. Like if you're the spouse,
I'm slack-jawed.
Yeah, it's really weird. But I think up until that point, the idea was that the marriage contract itself was
your permission,
was consent
to, yeah, that's
to do
not,
anything.
Not true.
It's not true.
Not true.
Not the case. And honestly, if we'd been electing more women for a longer period of time,
it would
this
have probably
shit
changed
wouldn't
much
have been.
Earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what is she charged with?
She. You'll love. I know you love weird,
weird
statute
charges,
names.
Yeah.
She was charged with malicious wounding, which sounds like exactly right.
I'd say so.
3 weeks later, on July 9th, she files for divorce.
Good.
This isn't finalized, though, until 95. I don't know why that was, but...
Well, you can only tie up the court stays for so many days on your legal proceedings.
Yeah. So, John goes to trial first and is acquitted in November of 93 because it was almost impossible to prove sexual abuse in a marriage under the statute as it was written at the time.
Oh my God.
Also, it was weird. Like the judge didn't allow testimony about their marriage, which comes up.
How do you?
So it, anyway.
So there, he's acquitted.
He's acquitted. Okay. This guy is such a doofus. So the plastic surgeon.
Yeah.
Our celebration of plastic surgeons.
Is his penis still on?
John Berman is the plastic surgeon's name. John Berman puts John in touch with an entertainment lawyer.
So that he can really
make a killing on this. And Berman himself is like... I mean, he's done...
There's nothing entertaining about him except for...
Well, he's been defined solely...
Is this for porn?
Oh, he does end up doing porn. We'll talk about that.
Oh, my God.
But, like, Berman himself is all over the TV for a while because, like, he's legitimately...
I reattached a peanut. Like,
he's legitimately done something cool, but clearly there's just this gross... And Bobbitt is, like, too dumb to realize that he's kind of being sucked into this universe of people who want to use him to make money, and that it's not going to go well for him, all right. So at his trial, John had claimed that, like, look at me, I haven't done any media appearances about this. Like, I just want to move on with my life. I'm a good guy. I couldn't have possibly raped anybody. Like, everything's cool. And Lorena's done two interviews. She's trying to cash in on this. She's the worst. Like, I'm the victim here.
Okay.
So immediately after the trial concludes, interviews that he's already filmed and was paid for, presumably.
poppity pop pop.
Start popping up immediately.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
So all of that was a lie. He also had a bunch of different stories about the night itself. Sometimes he said that they didn't have sex at all. Sometimes he said they had consensual sex. Sometimes he said that his 95-pound wife had somehow like forced him to have sex, and that he was the victim of sexual abuse in the marriage. And
she doesn't weigh 100 pounds.
And you're a fucking Marine. We call that gaslighting today, by the way. So once he was acquitted, he hits the road for a 40-city tour. Just trying to cash it in.
Oh.
In January of 94, Lorena goes on trial for malicious wounding. And this was wall to wall. Like, CNN aired this thing. Court TV aired it. Like, this was their programming all day. Apparently, the Ukraine entered into a nuclear disarmament deal during this trial, and CNN cut away because the president of the United States, Bill Clinton, was having a press conference announcing that, you know, a nation in Eastern Europe had decided to give up nukes, which is kind of a big deal. CNN switchboard was flooded with callers.
Turn this
like,
back on.
Yeah, I can't believe you've cut away from this trial. This trial is awesome. Like, it was gross. Outside the courthouse. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Outside the courthouse, no less crazy. People were selling slice soda. They were selling hot dogs.
Oh.
There were chocolates shaped like penises.
Oh.
They had t-shirts emblazoned with Love Hurts and like Manassas, Virginia, a cut above.
No.
Yeah. Yep. Inside. And see this again, like there's so much comedy in this. Inside, 16 witnesses took to the stand to testify about John's temper, how abusive he was, the bruises that he would leave on Lorena. Like,
oh, good. So she had plenty
of... She had tons of backup.
Okay, great.
She like, because she's a manicure. She has this very public job. So she works with a crew of people, and she has clients that she sees.
You get to see her every day, probably with bruises.
So there was testimony about the, like, just constant, like, hypervigilance, anxiety sort of condition that she lived in.
That's how you get if you're with someone who's abusive.
On the stand, Lorena herself outlined in painstaking detail numerous instances in which John had kicked, punched, choked, grabbed, verbally abused, and raped her. So her defense was temporary insanity.
Okay.
And the jury was like, yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was, well, I guess she wasn't acquitted, but she was not found guilty. The law in Virginia, possibly still, but at the time required that she spend some time in a psychiatric facility to be evaluated to determine.
Hey, that's probably a good idea to get you unbrainwashed and ungaslit from crazy man.
Well, and to make sure that you're not a danger to yourself or others.
Absolutely.
Like, a jury has just declared that you have bouts of insanity sometimes.
Yeah.
So anyway, she spends 45 days in a psychiatric institution. Doctors decide she's good to go, and so she...
Hopefully starts on a pathway to healing.
Yes.
Yeah.
She walks out a free person, reverts to using her maiden name of Gallo.
Yeah, don't you think you would?
Yeah. Well, she still lives in the same community, and everyone, like...
Still now?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
She was just like, this is my home. Why would I move?
Yeah. Did he move?
He did move.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, she's lived a quiet life in Virginia ever since. This is so crazy, like, knowing what we know about the current immigration debate and immigration law today. So a few months after all this happens, she becomes a U.S. citizen.
Oh, yay for her.
I think, like, I just have a feeling that with, even though she wasn't convicted, with that much
situation.
Of a record, there's, I don't think they would, but maybe,
hey,
I don't
found
know.
Not guilty. There's, you can't.
Sure.
Can't be
well,
held against.
You're found... temporarily insane.
You're found not guilty.
By reason of... Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, she brings her family to the States to live with her.
Oh, great.
Like parents, siblings. So they all live... To this day, they all live very close to each other. She goes back to school. She eventually meets a guy, falls in love. They've been married for like 20 years.
Oh, how
They've
nice.
Got a teenage daughter.
Great.
In 2007, she started a foundation to help other survivors of domestic violence.
Oh, good for her. Yay. Yeah. Yay.
So now let's talk about Trashbag John, like this doofus that young, like 19-year-old Lorena agreed to marry. What a dick. So I recall this guy being really, like, in the headlines a lot in the 90s, mm-hmm. but, like, always as the butt of a joke.
Yeah.
Just always. There was... This is just not someone anyone respected, and that was always very clear. So, but he also, it's not like he was portrayed as a domestic abuser, which he...
He should have been.
Should have been, and it's not like the evidence for that didn't get stronger and stronger with each passing year. So he's just this, like, laughably pathetic guy who'd had his dick cut off and reattached. Like, that was like, how he was portrayed. So he moves to Vegas, which is...
Sure he does.
Totally a good life choice.
Hey, you're in the entertainment biz.
Yeah. And Ron Jeremy is like, hey, dude, like porn star Ron Jeremy, the hedgehog, is like, hey, have I got an idea for you? So in the fall of 94, they release John Wayne Bobbitt Uncut.
Oh, my God.
Which is apparently one of the best selling adult films of all time.
No.
But again, Super Doofus loses money on it.
How do you...
Everybody else made money. John Wayne Bobbitt did not. In case you're still wondering if this is a he said, she said thing, around the same time, he was convicted of misdemeanor domestic battery against his girlfriend at the time. So he kind of becomes a recurring...
A caricature of himself.
Well, yeah. But he also becomes a recurring caricature on the Howard Stern radio show.
Oh, no.
And at some point, Stern offers to pay him to get penis enlargement surgery. Or like Stern will pay for
Howard
it.
Howard Stern.
So he does. Because again, this guy's a doofus. The surgery didn't go right. Like, one of the articles I read quoted somebody as saying, like, with this kind of surgery, you can do length or you can do width.
You can't do both.
And he tried. This leads to another porn flick. Another Ron Jeremy joint called Frankenpenis. I will admit that I did a Google image search of that phrase and nothing. I still don't know quite what Frankenpenis looks like, which is fine.
Which is fine.
It's fine. But apparently that was a good descriptor for what he was left with. Another boss. Yeah, so he gets a job at the Moonlight Bunny Ranch brothel in Nevada.
Oh, well, sure.
The boss there said, yeah, the girl said that his dick looks a little like a dented Red Bull can.
Oh. I'm trying to process it, and I'm horrified at myself. I'm trying to do it.
Well, and so, like, the dude who the brothel owner hires him because he's John Wayne Bobbitt, and he knows that as soon as the press hears that John Wayne Bobbitt works at a brothel...
People are going to flock to...
Yeah. Right. So, sure enough, the press swoops in, because again, like, kind of funny, right? Like, weird, bizarre, funny. And John Bobbitt's like, yeah, I really miss Lorena. I really wish that we could get back together.
Oh, hell no. Right? Hell no.
So he ends up fired from the brothel because the boss is like, dude, she cut your dick off. You don't apologize
to
her.
I tell you to grow a set, but...
Yeah, like, which is also just a bizarre... I don't know.
Oh, my God.
99, gets 5 years probation for attempted grand larceny. And,
what?
And a few months later, he's found guilty of harassing an ex-girlfriend. He appears on WWE Monday Night Raw. He becomes a knife thrower in the Jim Rose Circus while. He tries to get a toehold in reality TV, which is like the only career path that makes sense for this guy at this point. And he's charged with battering his third wife. In 2014, he breaks his neck in a car accident, which he survives and he seemingly recovers from. And so now he lives off of a settlement from the case. He's just like a 50-ish...
Sad man.
...year old, dude who lives in North Vegas. He spends his career path... So there's some story that a billionaire buried a case of money or gold or treasure, basically, in the Rocky Mountains.
So Big Doofy is out looking for it?
Doofy spends his time wandering around the Rocky Mountains looking for this guy's...
I am...
sack of gold, and his big dream is that he'll...
Sack of gold.
Well, so his big dream, though, is that he finds it, and because he really is, he's a big Trump supporter, and that the president invites him to the White House to congratulate him. That's apparently the dream of John Wayne Bobbitt.
I mean, probably if you, after the Covington behavior, just reminded the president about all of your previous bad behavior, he'd invite you over for some hamburgers.
Possibly so. So
what is she up to?
She has been in the news a bit lately as the...
Yeah. Thanks, yeah. New York Times.
Thanks, New York Times.
No, but she's got a special or something coming up?
Yeah, Jordan Peele is producing a four-part documentary that will be on Amazon Prime starting February 15th, so just a couple weeks from now.
Oh, fantastic.
It's called Lorena, and it is... Apparently, both of them are interviewed in this, but it is a conscious effort to tell her story and not just the weird story of... Sure. Like Dick in a field in a
whatever
hot dog box
has,
on ice.
Yeah.
So the New York Times piece, and there were others. There was a big Vanity Fair piece, Rolling Stone. I found a bunch of like contemporary from 1993 articles. We'll put all this on trashydivorces.com. But the New York Times piece had a line really late in it that I thought kind of summarized just how weird... This whole story was much darker than
absolutely
than I had realized. And, you know, I just wanted to make a little comedy podcast where we use divorce as a foil to, like, point out, you know, oddities. This, you know, is pretty grim.
No, these are your 90s trashy divorces.
Yeah. So the New York Times, the writer for the Times, wrote, "It occurred to me that there would be no documentary, no Bobbitt jokes, or permanent place in popular culture had John severed some vital piece of Lorena." So that is
entirely true.
Yeah.
No, this is unexpected. Are you okay?
Ugly.
You're pulling a me, you're tearing up a little.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You all right?
I'm fine.
No,
I don't know.
Kid.
Yeah, like... I don't know where to, like, John, like, I feel like John has to get five trash cans because, like, he's a domestic abuser.
Intimate partner violence is a real thing.
It is a real thing.
We'll link to some stats. Like, if you are a victim of intimate partner violence, like, it's statistically...
Is it thehotline.org? Was that the website you sent me?
We'll post some help resources and some stats because it's legitimately a thing.
You know, one thing I clicked through... And one of the menu items is basically like, is this abuse? Which I think is a really, like, I think a lot of people don't realize that uh-huh. the behavior that they have
if you're
been
getting
acclimated
gaslit,
to.
That's
yeah.
exactly right.
So anyway, yeah, complicated. I thought they were just going to be funny stories, but no, we've got a person shot in the face. We've
got these are your 90s.
Dude literally dismembered and then remembered, and now he's just like literally stomping around the mountains
hunting for gold
so that Donald Trump pats him on the head.
John Wayne.
I'm gonna call it a five.
Shh, I'm with you.
Five trash cans.
Done. He's pretty bad.
Yeah.
He's pretty bad.
Yeah.
Maybe next week we come back with something a little bit more old Hollywood and glamorous that isn't quite as sad.
Something.
Divorce is sad.
Yeah,
unless
I mean,
it's right. And these, if you're married to a sociopath, get the fuck out and get divorced.
Yeah, these particular, like, it's just like I don't want to downplay the, like, if you only go for laughs, which you can tell this story just for laughs. But if
sure.
you only do, you miss
the context.
You miss what's
of
important
the story.
About it.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's been a bit of a writing challenge this week, and hopefully, I've not been horribly unfair. I don't know.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
We appreciate
it. It was our first cut is the deepest episode that we started out with better intentions that went down the
I mean such
down
a
the sad.
Such a glib title. I mean, when it came to us, we were like, oh, I know who I'm doing for this one, and then it was a different
no we
thing.
Learned I didn't know I yeah like because he doesn't go around saying I'm a domestic abuser,
right?
So you know, unless you're in the knee deep part of the story.
Yeah, and he says he denied, ask him, he's never done anything wrong in his life. He is just a victim.
That's how most domestic
people. He is a victim of women. Yeah. He's just a victim of life, and you know, just waiting for a red hat pat on the head.
Jesus.
All right, so next week we'll be back with two new stories that perhaps will not go to such ugly places.
Well, that's the dream now. I'm consulting our list to find some happier, trashier divorces.
Yeah.
Again, thanks everybody for tuning in. We appreciate you. Stay single.
We'll see you next
Don't marry week. An abuser. Get help.
Bye, everyone.
And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's store on Instagram, and definitely drop into Ratsy's store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.